fires and scores! Patrick Laine snaps it. What a goal by Laine.
Gonna throw this one in the trash and move on. That's not obviously the way you want to start.
Shooting, it's off of Hellebuck. Rebound, side of the net. Stopped by Hellebuck. Key saves for Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.
Stand by, highlights. Stand by, host. You big boy.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Smile, everyone.
With Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manouk.
And cue the little criminal.
On your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. It's a very busy program indeed. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. But if we like what you text us, we might even read it on air. That's the option. That's the promise we make to you on each and every Saturday morning. And of course, our website. It's got all the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's IllegalCurve.com. The Moose, big winners last night in Belleville against the Belleville Senators. They're going to be in action this afternoon against the Toronto Marlies, a back-to-back situation between the best in the West and the best in the East, between the Moose and the Marlies. We'll touch on that throughout the program. I say good morning, without further ado, to my man Ezra Ginsberg, my man on my far left, Dave Manouk. Gentlemen, it's nice to see that you guys are wearing color-coordinated hoodie sweatshirts for this Saturday morning.
I'm just happy that we got to the show on time, Drew. We got stuck behind a train just off of Pembina Highway there on Windermere. So we walked in, you know, with about a minute and a half to go before the show. Luckily, we were able to get in here on time and get set up. But good to be here, guys. Lots to talk about. As you mentioned, Drew, we have a jam-packed show coming up. And, it's great to see the Moose keep on rolling. Buddy Robinson, what a night for him.
Yeah, I guess his former club, 1 goal, 4 assists, 5-point night. Everybody was rolling. The Moose were rolling. It was one of those games they looked like they had complete control. They were up 3-1. Then they gave up 2 goals in about 10 seconds, one on the power play. To tie the game, but then they came out, scored 4, I think, in 10 minutes in the third period and didn't look back. So it was another big win. They're just continuing to roll. They're 15-1-0-1 in their last 17 games. So this is a team that's doesn't show a lot of defeat in its game, and it's going to make for one heck of a game today and tomorrow in Toronto.
There you have it. Let's get started by talking about the Winnipeg Jets. We know that they're going to be in action later on tonight in St. Louis as part of that home and home tonight in St. Louis, tomorrow back here in Winnipeg. We start by looking back at Thursday night's defeat at the hands of the Chicago Blackhawks, though. I think certainly a disappointing effort by the Winnipeg Jets in a game that was much hyped. In that they're, they use it as, quote-unquote, one of those measuring stick games. They've been better record-wise than the Blackhawks for the majority of the season, well, all season, really. But on Thursday night, it was a poor performance by the hometown team, dropping that 5-1 decision on home ice, a game that was, 3-0 before 10 minutes had lapsed in the first period and was more or less over at that point in time as the Blackhawks just dominated the Jets on Thursday night.
Yeah, Drew, and I didn't think it was as bad as some are making it out to be because if you remember, Patty Laine hits a crossbar there in the third period. If he makes that game 4-2, then, maybe the Jets get within one goal and make it interesting there. We know they didn't do that, and the Hawks went on to win 5-1. But as you mentioned, Drew, it was the first period. Chicago scores 3 goals in the first 5 shots. I don't think we've seen that maybe ever in Jets 2.0 history. A team comes in to Bell MTS Place and scores that many goals on that many shots, right? 3 and 5. Mm-hmm. And, for me, it was, turnovers and it was, some missed assignments on the first goal. Tyler Myers goes for a bit of a skate. On the second goal, Joel Armia coughs up the puck and the Jets are just out of position. So it was just really those missed defensive assignments. They just weren't sharp in the first period. And, you know, they weren't that great in the second period either. It was really the third period when the Jets came on, but it just wasn't their night. And, you know, they had a great performance on Monday night against Vancouver, Dave. And you wonder if this team is really hurting from the lack of practice that they're getting, right? They had an off day Tuesday. The entire team had an off day, and that was well-deserved. They won the game on Monday, but then you had a practice on Wednesday where there were a bunch of players missing, Dave, and we know that over the last 3 or 4 weeks, because of the schedule, all the games, the Jets haven't practiced a lot, and you know, you maybe saw that in the first half of the game.
Yeah, and I think there may be a bit of a flu bug. They haven't really said much, but I mean,
Wheeler.
It sounds like Wheeler had a flu against the Canucks, and then Tyler Myers missed the skate, I believe, yesterday. So you're having guys, and Matt Hendricks missed it, so I suspect there may be a bit of a flu bug going through the team, but they haven't really touched on it that much. So, you know what, yeah, there's definitely that element. I mean, they haven't practiced a significant amount of time, and we don't obviously know what Chicago's schedules look like, but at the same time, you know, it was one of those games that you anticipated the Jets kind of having a better start. And you know, sure, it felt a little bit, a bit of a last year feel where, you know, they score two goals against, they get two goals scored against them quickly. And as a result, they're somewhat chasing the game. But I think as you hit on it early in your answer, I think it was just a lack of sharpness. I just didn't think that the team played the game that we're used to seeing them play, especially at Bell MTS Center, where they've been, you know, near undefeatable at the home rink. So for me, it was just a game we're not used to seeing from the Jets. And you're right, they in theory could have potentially gotten back into it. It would have made it a little more interesting. But it just felt like that was Chicago's game to win.
Yeah, they were the better of the two teams by far. It wasn't even competitive. Well, I mean, I guess it was competitive, but Chicago was the better of the two teams. It'd be hard pressed to say otherwise. Let me ask you guys this: with the loss, they're now down to 1-3-1 in their last five. I would think it's fair to say that they've been struggling more than being successful as of late. Do you see signs of concern? Do you see reasons to be concerned with the performance of the Jets that might be more than just sort of the ups and downs in the course of a season? It's not always going to be hunky-dory. There's always going to be sort of peaks and valleys. They're certainly in a valley, but do you see more signs of concern than just the simple fluctuations in the course of a season?
Yeah, it's a good question, Drew. And the Jets are still third in the division. So it's not like the Jets have slipped to fifth or sixth in the Central and, you know, they're holding down a wild card spot right now. They're right up there with Nashville and St. Louis. Nashville's pulled away a little bit just because they can't lose. But I think you have to be concerned. I think you have to be concerned with the amount of goals that they're giving up. And we saw, you know, them give up 6 goals against Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those was an empty netter, I believe. And you saw them give up 5 goals against Chicago. You saw them give up 5 goals against Detroit. So that's 3 of the last 5 games the Jets have given up 5 or more goals, mm-hmm. right? So that's what you have to be concerned about. And I think you have to be a little bit concerned about, you know, the lack of production from your top two lines, Dave. I mean, let's be honest. Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, and Kyle Connor did not have a good game on Thursday night. And Kyle Connor found himself, you know, bumped down onto the fourth line at one point, right, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I realize that, you know, some of the players might be going through a bit of a flu bug or something like that, but for me, that's the biggest concern. You know, Nikolai Ehlers, you know, there's nothing wrong with his game. Nikolai Ehlers is putting the puck in the net every game, it seems like.
Yeah.
But the Scheifele-Wheeler line has not been very good, I would say, you know, in some spurts of these last 5 or 6 games, certainly not against the Vancouver Canucks, but certainly against the Chicago Blackhawks, that wasn't a very good line. And they're giving up a lot of goals. And, you know, Connor Hellebuyck, it's undeniable. You know, you look at his last 5 or 6 starts, his save percentage has not been great. And sure, the team in front of him, I don't think, has been as good as they were maybe 3 weeks ago. But, you know, that's part of it. But I think you have to be concerned. 1-3-1, and, you know, they've basically been playing .500 the last 12 or 13 games. So they've given themselves a cushion, so it hasn't really hurt them. But, you know, these next two games, we're going to talk about it a lot today. But, you know, the games against St. Louis back-to-back and the game against Nashville, and then it's not going to get any easier as you've got Edmonton a couple times and you've got the Islanders a couple times. And I realize Edmonton's out of the playoffs right now, but they're going to be desperate.
Yeah, you got a Boston team that's playing, you know, decent hockey. They're in a playoff spot in the Atlantic Division. So you're right. The schedule from here on out through the end of December is not easy by any stretch of the imagination. You know, Dave, do you think this team misses Byfuglien and Enstrom? maybe more than people would have initially given credit for?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question about it. I mean, Dustin Byfuglien carries that puck out of the zone. I mean, Dustin Byfuglien loves to get – he's kind of – people love to pillory him a little bit. But I think you see what you're missing when you don't have Dustin Byfuglien in the lineup. You lose that physicality. You lose that guy who can head man the puck out of your zone. So I think from my perspective, yeah, you've got a big hole. When you hear Dustin Byfuglien's out week to week, that's a big hole to fill. And with all due respect to Ben Schrott and Tucker Pullman, those guys aren't Dustin Byfuglien. And so, and they're not replacing Dustin Byfuglien anytime soon. So the fact is that, when the Jets' defense is healthy, that's a significant defense to go up against. But we're seeing now what's happening, right? And it's a little bit unexpected in the sense that you still, with that top four, would think that they could shut it down a little bit more than they are right now. So I don't know what it is, what the lack of sharpness is with this team for the last couple of weeks, but there's definitely some tweaks to this game, to their game, that they need to be making.
Yeah, and some obviously with the loss on Thursday night, Paul Maurice passes Al Arbor for most regulation losses in NHL history. Not a milestone the coach was looking to reach, but you knew it was going to happen this season.
Yeah, I would imagine Paul isn't too proud of that particular statistic. But
I guess it means you got some longevity, I suppose, as an NHL head coach.
He was asked about it yesterday. Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press asked him about it yesterday in the scrum. He gave an answer. It's on the site if you want to listen to it.
There you go. You can check it out, illegalcurve.com. When we come back, Lou Korak, the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com, joins us. We'll preview tonight's Jets-Blues game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentists of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. He's a very good friend of the program. Pleased to welcome back to the show Lou Korak. Lou, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Lou. First of all, how's your health? Because I'm concerned because the St. Louis Blues are certainly running into a bad streak of luck right now, and I just want to make sure that you're feeling okay.
Oh, I'm perfectly fine right now, but knock on wood, you never know. I mean, it's turned into, they might have to start enlisting the MASH unit here on the ice at Scottrite Center soon with the way some of these guys have gone down, and it's all really happened here. I mean, I guess you can backtrack it all the way to the beginning of the season with, Robbie Fabry and a couple of guys that got injured during training camp. But hearing about the last week, it's really been something. And, but as the players say, there's no excuses. Nobody's going to feel sorry for them. Injuries are part of it. That's all part of an 82-game season, and everybody pretty much goes through it, and the Blues are going through it right now.
Sticking with the injuries, Lou, we know that Alex Pietrangelo is not going to play tonight against the Jets, but I guess first part of a two-part question, do you expect Pietrangelo to be back tomorrow, and how serious is Jay Bouwmeester's injury, and how weird is it that Jay Bouwmeester keeps getting injured considering that he was an Iron Man for so many years?
Well, Father Time typically starts catching up to you at some point. I mean, he is 34. Jay Bouwmeester is 34 years old now, and it is a weird one because, he took the pregame or he took the morning skate on Thursday and appeared fine and was pretty clear in the locker room after the morning skate that unless something weird happens to him that he was going to be in the lineup against Anaheim on Thursday and took the ice for the pregame skate and was part of the rushes and next thing he's a healthy scratch, but they had Jordan Schmaltz out there as an insurance policy just in case, and good thing they did because they wound up having to need him. So it's tough to tell, but when Mike Yost said they were going to hold him out for the weekend, and they didn't make it sound like it was going to be all that serious, but apparently it's serious enough now where he's going to wind up missing an entire week's worth of games. So this is something that we're going to have to monitor and keep an eye on. It's an undisclosed injury. They've never told us to they were not that they were going to tell us whether anything specific or not, but at least an indication of a lower or upper body injury, and we don't even know that. So, but as far as Petrangelo goes, yeah, I would expect him to be ready to go tomorrow. He's been on the ice a couple of days this week now, and the Blues are taking the ice here right now. You know, today will be a telltale and a good indication whether he's able to take the ice again. And if all indications he gets through fine here, he'll be able to come off injured reserve, and I fully expect him to be in the lineup tomorrow.
Lou, Hockey Hall of Famer and 9-time Stanley Cup champion Larry Robinson was named a senior consultant to hockey operations in September. What kind of an impact is he having on this team?
You know, that's a good question, and one that certainly, you know, bears notice that you need to take notice of that, because just the name itself obviously piques everybody's interest. But I think he's tried to just give his input whenever asked. I don't think he's necessarily here. He pops in maybe once or twice a month. He lives in Florida. I don't think he wants to necessarily step on anybody's toes, but I found that it was interesting yesterday during, they had a brief practice here. He was here in town and on the benches and doing some instruction with some of the players. And I guess, you know, when, you know, things have hit the skids here the last couple of games, you know, it never hurts to have a Hockey Hall of Fame voice there to help you out. So he's just kind of here to lend his eyes and, you know, be a sounding board if anybody needs it. And that's pretty much the gist of it. But the Blues are surrounding themselves with as many Hall of Fame type guys as they can, and people that have been in the game a long time. So it's kind of one of those where Mike Yeo also has said that, you know, he's always looking for input from guys like that as well. Somebody that's been a coach in the league and somebody that's been a player for a long time. So it's just one of those where I don't think he's got all hands on deck as to what his role is here. But anytime somebody needs him for any sort of thing, he's here to lend a helping hand. And, you know, it's always good and refreshing for these guys to see him because they have a ton of respect for him.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Lou Korak. Lou is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. Lou, the goaltending also got hit by a little bit of the rash of the injury bug with Carter Hutton out of the lineup. He's now back. He was activated off IR yesterday. Would you expect to see Hutton today or tomorrow in the course of this back-to-back?
You know, he's going to play one of the two games, obviously. He came off the IR yesterday and says he's feeling good and ready to go. So from the injury front, just a little bit of good news there for, as far as the Blues are concerned. He's on the ice right now, and actually he looks like he's in the starter's net. I haven't seen Jake Allen yet. So but Mike Yeo did say that they were going to split the games, and I thought maybe that they would go with Hutton in the road game tomorrow because historically in his time here with St. Louis, he's been a very, very good road goaltender. But they've used him a little more this year on home ice and played very, very well and has put up some really good numbers in the limited amount of action that he's had. But we're not sure exactly right now, but all indications are he could be the guy that goes tonight. But that could change. And, you know, but it's for sure that he's going to play one of the two games, and they've got to get him in there because he hasn't played since December 1st, and you know, if he's healthy and ready to go, they're going to want to get him in there. And you know, they've got two very good capable goalies, and both of them are going to wind up playing this weekend.
Lou, we can't have you on and not talk to you about Braden Schenn. He's on pace for a career year, 16 goals, 37 points in 33 games. It was back in late June that the St. Louis Blues made that trade with the Flyers, sending Jori Lehterä and that late first-round pick to acquire Braden Schenn. Is it safe to say that this trade couldn't have worked out better for the Blues?
Yeah, I've been asked that a number of times, and so far it's been pretty one-sided. And, you know, I hate to knock Jori Lehterä because fun guy to have and fun guy to cover here in his time in St. Louis, but it couldn't have worked out any better. I couldn't have imagined the Blues would feel that this worked out any better for them. Granted, they had to give up a couple of first-round picks to do it, but I think with the haul that they've gotten so far and the numbers that they've gotten from Braden Schenn, I don't think he could be any more happier right now. He's like the rest of the team right now. Goal scoring has been a little bit of a problem spot so far in these last two games. And, you know, taking away his so-called right-hand man and Jaden Schwartz has led to that. I mean, those two have gone together about as well as the twosome could have gone on a line. And, you know, you take that away, and now you have to improvise and try to make things work with other players. And although Shen had a nice little run there again with a point streak, he scored 6 goals in 4 games and was the NHL's number one star last week. You know, he's in a little bit of a rut, and this team's looking to get out of it offensively here right now, just kind of trying to find the right mix. But so far it's been a great year, and you couldn't have asked for a better start. And I think he's just really motivated by the fact that the Blues are using him in the center ice position again, which is his natural position.
You know, Lou, you mentioned that there was another draft pick involved in that trade. Isn't it true that the Blues can defer that 2018 pick, if it's a top 10 pick, to 2019?
Yeah, it's draft protected, obviously, top 10 protected. So, you know, by all stretch of the imagination here, that's not going to happen. You wouldn't imagine this team to do a complete nosedive and wind up finishing in the bottom 10 in the league. So if they happen to somehow, you know, have a top 10 pick, they can protect it to next year. And but other than that, it's going to wind up going to the Flyers. And the Flyers have already used the one. It was the 27th pick this year, and the Blues were able to get back into the first round, obviously, with the trade with the Pittsburgh Penguins. That was basically a wash. So it's really losing just one first-round pick. And but again, with what Braden Schenn and the return that they've gotten for him so far, I don't think they can be too disappointed with that. And he's only, you know, he's 25, 26 years old. I think he's really only scratching the surface. And as Doug Armstrong said when I talked to him after they made the trade, they still think his best years are ahead of him.
Lou, we have to ask you about this guy because he played 709 games for the Thrashers and the Jets. He's played 19 games with his new club. That is, of course, Chris Thorburn. What's the addition meant to this, to the Blues, and how has he addressed approaching the game against his former club?
Funny that you mentioned Chris Thorburn, because I'm looking down at the bench, and he just had a nice little exchange with Blake Wheeler and a couple of nice little pats on the shoulder. I talked to Chris Thorburn a couple of days ago, just, you know, if he circled these dates, and if this is something that he pointed out right away as soon as he signed with the Blues. And he says, yeah, you know, it's human nature. As soon as the schedule came out, he took a peek when the first matchups with the Jets were going to be. And it's going to be a little bit emotional for him, and it's going to be different. When you spend that much time with one organization and have a lot of friends on the other side, of course it's going to be meaningful to you. But you know what? He's just been a good veteran presence on this team. The guys love him in the locker room. And, you know, when they need that physical presence and for him to make a difference on that fourth line, he's been able to do that. They haven't asked him to do too much. You know, he's not going to go out there and play 14, 15 minutes a night. You know, he's going to get his 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 minutes. And if he's making an impact, he's going to be on the higher end of that. But, you know, he hasn't been a detriment to this team. And like I said, the players really like him. And Alex DeFrangelo is one that really raved about him. And, you know, when you're talking about the captain of a team and looking for some input and some advice on some veteran stuff, Chris Thorburn's always a guy that he's going to. And so far it's worked out really good for this team.
You know, Lou, Sammy Blais was recalled recently by the Blues. He's putting together a nice season with the San Antonio Rampage, even though he split time between the AHL and the NHL. Are you expecting him to get into some games here? And how big of a steal is that draft pick looking like right now, sixth round, 176th overall back in 2014?
You know, he's had his ups and downs so far. And, you know, depending on what some of these guys are feeling like today, because there was a couple of guys that didn't take part in practice yesterday, and they got Sammy Blais up here again. I believe it's the fourth time that he's been recalled already. And, you know, it's been a work in progress so far. They know that he's got some high-end skill there and a guy that eventually is going to be able to work himself into this lineup on a regular basis and make an impact offensively. But the one thing that Mike Yost said that they really want to work on him when he's at this level is to be a little more predictable to his teammates and just be, you know, a guy that's predictable away from the puck. And those are some habits, as Mike Yost put it, that sometimes you have to work out of players. That's still a work in progress right now, but they feel like that he's on the upward swing there. Whether he's in the lineup tonight, we don't know that yet or not, because the Blues are having an optional here today. But, you know, he's been a pleasant surprise. And out of the young guys coming out of training camp, he was one of the ones that really made a name for himself and made it difficult for this team when they made those final few choices when it came to roster cuts. He didn't make the cut out of camp, but as you saw, he was quick guy to get back here from San Antonio when they needed somebody to fill in.
A couple more questions for you, Lou, and we appreciate your time. You mentioned the AHL affiliate. The Blues don't actually have a primary affiliate this year. They're splitting their players among a bunch of different teams. How has that worked out?
It's been a work in progress, for sure. I mean, they've had to split, you know, players between San Antonio and obviously in Chicago, with Vegas now being the affiliate for the Chicago Wolves. You know, putting half of your prospects in one organization and half in another, and they actually, one of their depth organizational goalies, Jordan Bennington's on loan with Providence, who's a part of the Boston Bruins organization. So it's been a heck of a challenge for them, and not the most ideal situation, but Doug Armstrong did say that they felt like that they could make it work. They signed their affiliation with San Antonio that's going to start next year, so they've already got their roots planted in there, even though Colorado right now has got the final say with that. But you just have to make do with what you've got there. And so far, their prospects have been able to get ample amount of ice time, which is, I think, the biggest concern that they had is how much ice time are these guys going to get at that level? And so far, it's worked out really well.
Last one for you, Lou. Obviously, Jaden Schwartz is going to be out of the lineup for the next number of weeks with that fractured ankle. Who needs to pick it up offensively? Who needs to help carry the slack with Schwartz out of the lineup?
Well, you can point to a number of guys, and the most obvious guy is Tarasenko. And right now, he's in a bit of a rut, kind of like this team is, with just 2 goals in 11 games, one of them being an empty netter, one of them being an overtime winner. It's not for a lack of chances. He's certainly getting his scoring opportunities, shots per game. Before the last game, I had it added up, guys. He's averaging over 8 shot attempts per game. So he's getting his chances, but right now he's getting a lot of shots blocked. He's trying to find that perfect shot. And, you know, he's the guy that you're going to look to be able to pick up the slack there. And eventually, once the pucks start going in, I don't think they're too worried about him. But I would look at guys like Paul Stastny and Alexander Steen. You know, you're paying these guys big bucks to produce for you offensively. They're playing in the top 6 role. And when you take Jaden Schwartz out, I don't think it can be done by one person. It's going to have to be by a committee.
Lou Korak is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. Lou, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this morning.
All right, thanks for having me.
Take care, Lou. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Blues. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Now Jaden Schwartz just took a shot right off the ankle. Looked innocent enough, and the shot was close to him, but, oh boy.
It's a tough break. It's tough. I feel really bad for Schwartz, just the year that he's having. The way that he's put himself on the map in our league, the recognition that he's getting has been so well deserved. So I feel bad for him, and obviously it's a loss for him.
Jaden Schwartz off to a tremendous season for the St. Louis Blues, second on the team in scoring. Going to be out of the lineup now for the next 6 or so weeks. Fractures his ankle after taking that shot to the leg. You heard it in the clip as we returned from break. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, and this segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Jets have a prime opportunity to bounce back from the disappointment of Thursday night, starting tonight in St. Louis, where they meet the Blues in that home-and-home series. A crucial home-and-home series. If you're looking at it, if the Jets were to win both, then they leapfrog the Blues into either first or second, depending on what Nashville does. If the Blues are able to take both, well, then they build out a 7-point lead over the Winnipeg Jets. And this is we talked about in the first segment, the Jets struggling, 1-3-1 in the last 5, basically playing 500 hockey over the last couple weeks. tonight against a injured St. Louis Blues team is a prime opportunity to get back on the right track and continue your upward trajectory in the Central Division.
Yeah, Drew, if you think about it, it's like a mini two-game series, right? And it's pretty incredible. I know you just said that.
I was going to say, not if I think about it, it just is a mini two-game series.
And if you think about it as well, it's kind of ridiculous that the Jets haven't played the Blues yet. And they had just played the Blackhawks for the first time this year. It's pretty incredible here. Yeah. We're in mid-December. And, you know, you mentioned some of the injuries. Alex Pietrangelo is going to rejoin the team in Winnipeg on Sunday, guys. And it's really unfortunate for a guy like Jaden Schwartz that he's out of the lineup for the next 4 to 6 weeks, because not only is he having a career year this year, but he's been a big part of this Blues offense, and he's had injury problems in the past, including around playoff time. So, you know, Jaden Schwartz's injury is definitely going to hurt the Blues. But the Blues are reeling right now. They've lost their last two games, and arguably one of their worst performances against the season against the Ducks, losing 3-1 last game.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is an 8-point series, in my opinion. The Jets are 3 points behind the Blues right now, but if they win these two games, they're 1 point ahead of the Blues, right? So, you know, pretty incredible that the St. Louis Blues, with all of these injury problems, and, you know, you expected them to maybe take a step back without a full year of Kevin Shattenkirk, right? Of course, they lost him at the trade deadline, but, I mean, this team still has a lot of weapons, and, you know, Lou Korak last segment mentioned Vladimir Tarasenko. You know, he's still having a pretty good season. Alex Steen, Paul Stastny, and Braden Schenn, guys. To me, Braden Schenn's a great story because, you know, he's a high draft pick by the Philadelphia Flyers, and, you know, he was used on the wing and at center. At times he was on the third line, and, you know, right now he finds himself centering that top line, and he's extremely dangerous. So, you know, they get lucky with a couple of injuries on the back end there with Pietrangelo and Bouwmeester, but it's still a pretty mobile defense. Colton Parayko's having a good year. Joel Edmondson, I think, is one of the most underrated defensemen in the league, and, you know, they're strong in net, Dave. So, you know, this is going to be a big test for the Jets, and, you know, they have to respond after a very disappointing game against Chicago.
Someone said to me, this has a feel of that. You remember that home, but it was home twice for the Jets against the Washington Capitals.
In the lockout shortened year where they played the Capitals, I think it was a Friday and a Saturday against the Caps on home ice.
At the MTS Center, which it was called at the time.
The Jets were in a playoff spot at that time. They were almost atop the, I guess that would have been the Southeast Division. Yeah.
But you know, I mean, isn't that significant because there's still so much more of the season to go. But this is a game. This is a series of games that you really have to have good efforts in. In one part, because the Blues are reeling a little bit, so you have to take advantage of an opponent that isn't at 100%. I mean, the reality is, sure, the Jets have lost Dustin Byfuglien and Tobias Enstrom, but for the most part, they're a healthy group. And so you really have to be able to try and take advantage, especially, like, as you just said, you've got a Blues team that's only scored one goal in the last two games.
Mm-hmm.
So their offense hasn't been great. So you really have to get going early. They haven't been phenomenal at Scott Trade Center. I think they're 11-7-0. They're a much better road team. They're actually 10-3-2 on the road versus the way they play at home. So that's another thing. It's not like they have a crazy home ice advantage. The Jets have an opportunity here to come in. And they have to be, you know, the truth is, Jets have to play a little bit pissed off. I mean, as we've touched on for the last couple of segments, this is a team that isn't playing particularly well right now. And sure, they've built up a nice bank of points, and that's obviously always important to do early in the season so you're not chasing later on. But the fact of the matter is, this isn't a team that can rest on its laurels at this point and say, okay, well, we can coast into the playoffs. We've already done, because some guy, you know, we at U.S. Thanksgiving, we were above the line. The reality is, this is a relatively healthy team. There's no excuse for kind of the drop off. So you really need to play pissed off. You just got, you know, handed to you. You've got three straight, but you had four straight games against divisional opponents. So this is not a time to kind of sit back and relax. This is a time to take your game to the next level. And that really goes kind of across the board. I mean, I think part of this is usage. I think Matthew Perreault needs to be a little bit more involved in the game. I mean, I just don't think that a player of his, like, it's all fun and it's all well and good that we call him the best fourth line player, but the reality is, like, I just don't think that you can afford to have Matthew Perreault playing fourth line minutes.
Yeah, you can only do that when everything else is working at peak perfection.
And as he talked about earlier, like, that first line hasn't been getting it done right now. So maybe it's time. I mean, again, if they don't do well today, I mean, Coach Maurice yesterday in practice went back to his lines, even though he blended it in the game against Chicago. He went back to the lines that he started the game with. So we'll see if they don't get a win today, or if they're not successful, how that is impacted.
Mason or Hellebuck today, Ezzy? Does it matter, given that you know that you're going to use one today and one tomorrow?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think it's a coin flip right now. I kind of want to say that Steve Mason gets the start tonight on the road, and then Connor Hellebuck starts the game tomorrow afternoon or late afternoon in Winnipeg.
5 o'clock tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, your guess is as good as mine, Drew. I mean, we know that most likely we're going to see both goaltenders this weekend, so I'm leaning towards Steve Mason. But, you know, back to Dave's point, there aren't many teams in the NHL that can match up the Jets' forward depth. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, the fact that the Jets are having, you know, some issues scoring goals as of late, not on a season basis, but as of late, the Jets are having trouble scoring goals. And you look up the middle.
And they're giving up too many at the same time.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, St. Louis up the middle, I think, is just as good as any team in the league with Braden Schenn, Paul Stastny, Patrick Berglund, and then you've got Kyle Brodziak there on the fourth line. So even though the Blues are missing, you know, a lot of offense by not having, you know, certain players in the lineup, including, you know, Alex Pietrangelo and Jaden Schwartz.
Robbie Fabbri, I mean, he's been out pretty much the entirety of the season, but, I mean, Robbie Fabry's a top six player
on the
Blues.
Well, and just imagine how good the Blues would be with Robbie Fabbri in the lineup,
absolutely.
Right? So, I mean, this team has a lot of scoring depth, a lot of good scoring depth on the wings. Ivan Barbashev was recalled from the American Hockey League. Vladimir Sobotka, since returning from the Continental Hockey League, you know, he's had an impact on this team. He returned late last year and into the playoffs for the Blues. So lots of matchup decisions for Paul Maurice. Is he going to put up the Adam Lowry line against Braden Schenn's line, or does he maybe want to line up Brian Little's line against Braden Schenn's line, because we've seen Adam Lowry's line being the shutdown line for the Jets for a big chunk of this season. So again, even though you've got Pietrangelo, Bouwmeester, and Schwartz out of the lineup, there's a lot of depth on this Blues team. So that's even more reason why the Jets have to bring an A game tonight.
Oh, absolutely. You have a St. Louis Blues team that is, to some extent, reeling. They're having a trouble offensively. I mean, you mentioned, you know, 3-1 against Anaheim on home ice earlier this week. They're not putting a lot of pucks in the net as of late. So this is a prime opportunity for the Jets to really get back to the game that has made them so successful this season, which is, I mean, certainly a sort of a defensive first mindset, so that you don't have to be in a run and gun situation. I mean, you have to play. I mean, you really have, you want your game to look reminiscent to how it looked last Saturday against the Tampa Bay Lightning, another upper echelon team in the NHL, where the Jets didn't get the win. They only got the 1 point for sending it into overtime. But if your game looked like that, I think the Jets would probably feel they're on the right track, as opposed to how it's looked in a lot of the other games over the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, you mentioned that the Blues are having trouble scoring goals. They've still got the fourth most goals in the West.
It's only recently they're having that trouble, yes. Yeah, only the last few games since Schwartz has been out of the lineup, yes.
Right. So, I mean, this team can score goals and they can defend as well. And, you know, you're going to miss your top pair there. But as I mentioned, they've got depth on defense there. Carl Gunnarsson, the veteran, and Roberto Bortuzzo, you know, he's a solid depth defenseman. So I think up and down the lineup, you know, you've got a lot of depth here. But you're right. I mean, the way you played against Tampa Bay, I think you elevated your game after disappointing games on the road against Florida and Detroit. So you have to do that, because the Jets kind of didn't find that extra gear against Chicago. And even though, you know, this team is reeling, I mean, the Blues want to get, you know, out of this losing streak. They want to get back into the win column. So these next two games are absolutely huge. Maybe the most two most important games of the season.
When we come back, it is, of course, the holiday season. Happy Hanukkah, guys, and Christmas is only about 9 days away. We'll talk about what your Winnipeg Jets, what the Jets fan in your life should want on their Jets holiday wish list. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
A night Hanukkah Harry saved Christmas.
On Moisha, on Herschel, on Shlomo, says Hanukkah Harry, 8 nights a year. On Moisha, on Herschel, on Shlomo, means that Hanukkah Harry is here.
John Lovitz playing the role of Hanukkah Harry from the famous Saturday Night Live sketch. God, that's an old sketch at this point in time, but never fails to make me laugh. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. We're going to discuss what the Winnipeg Jets, what fans of the Jets would want in their Winnipeg Jets holiday gift bag and their holiday wish list, in their Christmas list as we approach the holiday season here. Well, this segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, a official deli of illegal curve hockey and home of the illegal curve sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to watch the game, Bernstein's Deli's got you set up. They got the big screen TVs. They got great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. Check it out, bernsteinsdeli.com. So for the Winnipeg Jets fan in your life, Ezzy, you know, we're sitting here on December the 16th. The Jets are in a playoff spot, which is certainly a good feeling and something that hasn't happened. Well, it's only happened that one time a few years back where they made the playoffs. What are you looking for from this team to maybe improve upon? What are you looking for under the Christmas tree to help improve your Winnipeg Jets as we enter into the 2018 portion of the schedule?
I don't think it's something to improve the Winnipeg Jets. I think if you're a kid out there and you're waiting for Santa Claus or Hanukkah Harry, you want not only a playoff spot, but you want a playoff round victory. And we haven't seen that from the Jets 2.0 so far. As you mentioned, you know, the Jets made the playoffs back in 2015, but didn't win a single game against the Ducks. So for me, it's got to be, you know, winning a round at least. And I think if you're a more optimistic fan, you're going to say a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's throughout the season, the immediacy is good health. I mean, surely you have the depth with the Manitoba Moose, but you're thinking to yourself, if this team can get back to being healthy, have Dustin Byfuglien and Tobias Enstrom back in the lineup, you know, it's a pretty good top six. You can't be complaining about that. So I think good health from this squad. But I think, as he hit it on the head, I think that every Jets fan in this city is not only desperate for playoffs, but desperate for, I would go so far as to say, a few rounds of victory.
So a lengthy playoff run would be one of the key items under the Hanukkah menorah or the Christmas tree as we're in the holiday season here. Do you understand why? I mean, Paul Wiesek in his column in today's Free Press sort of wrote about bringing Jets fans in off the ledge after the performance on Thursday night. Do you understand why fans are so apoplectic every time the team has a bit of a letdown? You know, Thursday night's game, certainly a letdown. The games in Miami or the Sunrise and the game in Detroit, certainly a letdown. Do you get the angst that continues to exist around the Winnipeg Jets from their fan base, even though they are currently sort of in that quality playoff spot?
I don't think there is that much angst, is there?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously Paul does in his column in the Free Press. You don't think there's angst about every time this team sort of lays an egg to that degree?
I didn't read Paul's column, but unfortunately, sorry, Paul. But when you're talking about a Canadian NHL team, I think when the Leafs lose, do fans in Toronto not get upset?
Yes, well, they certainly.
And fans in Calgary, when they lose, do they not get upset? I mean, I think that Jets fans want them to win every game. So I think there are some fans out there that are a little bit worried because not only did the Jets lose on Thursday night to Chicago, but they've lost five of their last six games. So I think that's why there's angst among Jets fans just because of this recent slide. But, Dave, they're still third in the division. This is still a really talented team. You've got some injuries right now, but I don't think that you should worry that the Jets aren't going to be a playoff team this year. And if you are, then I think, yeah, you are a little bit paranoid at this point.
Well, you can't spell fanatic without F-A-N, and that's where the fan in fanatic comes. So, I mean, I think that's part of fandom in general. I think that just they're so invested in this team, and that's just, I think, as he said it right, it's a Canadian market. And I suspect in Calgary and Edmonton, you would see similarly when their teams are, you know, losing games. So I think it comes with any season. You have it, especially now where the Jets seem to have created these somewhat higher expectations. But it's interesting because I was talking to Pascal Vincent, the Moose head coach, on Monday at practice at the Iceplex. And I was asking him about his team and how well they're doing. And he said, you know, when your team is doing really well, you're probably not as good as you think you are. And, you know, it went similarly or conversely, when your team is doing poorly, it's probably not as bad as it looks. And I think that's probably the reality. I think it's probably closer to the truth. I think it's the fact that this Jets team, while underperforming from what we've seen over the course of the first probably 20 games of the season or 25 games, you know, they've hit a bit of a poor stretch. And I suspect they'll get out of it. This is not like a nosedive into the ground. I think it's more just kind of a little bit of turbulence, to use some airline analogies. And I think it's as simple as that. So I don't think it's Chicken Little. I don't think fans need to come in off the ledge. I mean, it was, don't get me wrong, the game in Florida and Detroit, I did not expect, because I expected Detroit to have that sort of game. Florida was a bit of a shocker Tampa, I thought they played well, and Vancouver, they played well. So the reality is, sure, they haven't gotten they haven't been playing as well as we expect them to do, but today and tomorrow really are the big tests for this team.
They just won 7 games in a row at home.
What have you done for me lately?
Like, are fans actually thinking that this isn't going to be a playoff team this year?
I understand.
They just won 7 in a row at home.
Yeah, but I understand why.
But you're a half glass half full kind of guy. Half empty, sorry. Half empty.
I don't think I'm a glass half empty kind of guy.
I think Drew's more of a quarter glass half empty.
I think I'm maybe. I would describe myself as a cautious optimist rather than a pessimist.
Are you Billy Mumfries, a cockeyed young optimist?
That would be lovely if I was from the Seinfeld. We really covered everything. Saturday Night Live, Seinfeld, everything in this segment.
Drew, but the Jets have lost 3 games all year in regulation at home.
Yeah.
All year, 3.
And
it's really on the road. You want something for the Christmas tree. How about more wins on the road?
Well, there you go. That's a reasonable one to put under the Christmas tree. A better performance on the road is what you're saying. Because you're right. They haven't been great on the road as of late. 7-6-4 on the road. I mean, taking the 4 games to overtime makes it look a lot better. But reality is you've lost more than you've won again away from Bell MTS Place this season. So, I mean, your point to think about the road record is a good sort of treat underneath the Christmas tree or underneath the Hanukkah menorah. From my perspective, what about Patrick Laine? I mean, to me, I would like to see Patrick Laine maybe deployed in different situations, particularly 5-on-5. I haven't been thrilled with the usage of Patrick Laine, especially even strength this season, and I wouldn't mind seeing that change up a little bit. I don't necessarily know that it will. But
Patrick, well, he's on the second line, so you're talking about him being on the first line,
or with different line mates. I don't really need to quantify it as a first line or a second line
thing. But if you're on the first line, you're with different line mates.
Yeah. I just don't love the usage of Patrick Laine this year. I want to see him put into more opportunities to succeed. And I know he's succeeding because his numbers are still pretty good, especially for a guy who's in his second year and who's just 19 years old. But something about Patrick Laine's year this year for me is leaving a little bit to be desired.
A lot of his goals are coming on the power play.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about it. It's not just Laine, it's that whole line. I mean, I think everyone expects that line of Ehlers, Little, and Laine to be better, Drew. But I agree with you. I mean, we've talked about this on the show before. There's an argument to be made that Patrick Laine should be playing with Mark Scheifele on the top line. And maybe the line is Ehlers, Scheifele, and Laine. It doesn't necessarily have to be Connor, Scheifele, and Laine, right? The point is that Laine can be better 5-on-5. I agree with you. And, that's Paul Maurice's decision. And, right now he seems to like Laine on that second line with Little and Ehlers. But we'll wait and see. I think they're going to be better this year, 5-on-5. I think the season is still early enough that they can be better, and we certainly know Laine is good on the power play, so I don't think anybody's going to have any problems with the way Laine's played out there on the PP with that big shot. So we'll see. We'll wait and see.
Well, I mean, the only thing I would say is that I think it's more on Patrick Laine than it is on his usage right now. I think his play speaks for itself. He's just not in the play, and perhaps that's line mates. Perhaps Nikolai Ehlers is just too fast to be playing with. He's probably too fast to be playing with almost anybody in this league. But I would suggest that that's not necessarily his usage. But and perhaps it's a little bit of maybe he hasn't found that chemistry with Brian Little that he may with a Mark Scheifele. But I think if you ask anybody, including Patrick Laine, I think his play would be he would say it's his own responsibility on how he's playing right now 5-on-5, not in terms of his usage, not in terms of his line mates, but
I would like to see him on his off wing. That's sort of where I'd like to see him. I think where he's playing currently on the right wing. I mean, he's obviously still a terrific player, so don't get me wrong. I'm not piling on a 19-year-old kid who's an otherworldly player. But I'd like to see him playing on his off wing where he can release that shot, on his strong side and get it off, even quicker and even more in advantageous situations. I think I'd like to see that for at least, a stretch of time here to see if that'll maybe get him going and get a spark in his game, because it seems where he's been, I mean, he's been good, obviously. You don't get 15 goals by being a slug. But I'd like to see him playing on his off wing a little bit more just to see if that might give him an extra boost to his game. When we come back, Craig Button, TSN Director of Scouting, is going to join us. We'll talk about Team Canada at the World Junior Hockey Championships. We'll talk about Logan Stanley getting cut from the team. We maybe even look around the NHL and talk about the Jets with Craig. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Might even read them on air. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program TSN's Director of Scouting, Craig Button. Craig, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, too, and thanks for having me. Always my pleasure to join you guys.
It's always our pleasure to have you on, Craig. Obviously, want to talk about the Winnipeg Jets, want to talk about Team Canada at the World Junior Hockey Championship. That's where we're going to start, Craig. Obviously, the final cuts made for Team Canada last night. Any surprises that jump out to you with regard to the final cuts? And overall, how would you sort of describe this version of Team Canada and their strengths and weaknesses entering into the World Junior Hockey Championship?
Yeah, you know, I can't say outside of Michael DiPietro being released. I mean, I wasn't surprised by anybody else. You know, I thought that they had a good group of players in camp that could form a really good team, and I think some of the decisions they had to make were with respect to what type of blue line did they want to put together, and you know, did they want to go a little bit more on speed and quickness and puck play as opposed to a little bit more size, or did they want to add a couple of bigger players? So I think that, you know, that's what the camp served a purpose for. I mean, you can debate whether Nick Suzuki should be there or Cody Glass should be there. I mean, to me, I look at those players and, you know, I think they're more than capable, but I don't sit there and say to myself, oh boy, like how did they miss not taking those guys? And I think they're good players. I think they could easily be on the team, and it comes down to, you know, probably, you know, where the other players might fit into the scheme of the team in a little bit different way. And I talk about players like Alex Formanton or Maxime Comtois, more players that they feel are going to be really bottom of the lineup, killing penalties, maybe catalyst type players, as opposed to Suzuki and Glass, who are real high end skilled players. And you know, maybe they're looking at those guys as maybe maybe having a little bit more of a challenge to fit into those other roles. Now, that being said, I think they have a team that can skate. I think they have a team that can move the puck from the blue line. And, you know, I think they have some size. So one of the things I think they're going to emphasize is trying to play in the offensive zone and keep the puck away like all teams do. And I think they have a team that they feel is capable of doing that. Now, to Michael DiPietro, he was a surprise, clear surprise for me. He's won a Memorial Cup. I think that he's proven it. I think that he's a goaltender that would help make the team better. I think Carter Hart's a good goaltender. But if Carter Hart falters, and I'm not saying Colton Point can't do it, but I think that Michael DiPietro is an unbelievable person and an unbelievable guy to have in that if you want him to be the backup role. So, and he's proven it. He's done it. And that to me was the big surprise. Last year in the World Junior Tournament, Tyler Parsons stepped in, and not that he stepped in, but I mean, he had done similar things to Michael DiPietro, win a Memorial Cup, be a real key player on a championship team, you know, not be in awe of the spotlight and be able to perform under the bright lights. I think the exact same thing about Michael DiPietro, and I think you want guys like that on your team. So that was my surprise in terms of a guy that was cut.
You know, Craig, going back to what you were saying earlier about the depth that this team has on the blue line and at every position, really, was that really working against Winnipeg Jets draft pick Logan Stanley when it came to making the final roster?
I don't think that. I mean, I think that's too simplistic to say it. I mean, I think that, you know, when you look at the type of players they wanted to go with, I mean, Logan was going to have to find a way to unseat one of those guys. And he wasn't better than those guys. He's not, it's not that he's not a good NHL prospect. This isn't about the NHL prospect. It's about right now. And he's not better than those guys for what they're looking for. So I don't think it's, you can call it competition and you can say, for what they're looking for, but he's just not better than those guys. And, you know, in terms, you got to go in there and you got to show that you're clearly better and that you can find your a spot on the team. I think Cal Foot did that. I think Cal Foot clearly did that. And that's why he's on the team, and I think that's why Logan isn't.
Craig, how many games do you expect Team Canada goalie Carter Hart to start at the World Juniors, and how impactful do you think last year's silver performance had on his overall development for this year?
Well, I think it helps. I mean, hey, listen. I mean, anybody that's been paying attention to Carter Hart and what he's done in the Western Hockey League, it's lights out brilliance. He's almost unbeatable. You look at his numbers, you look at what he's done, and it's not like he's playing on a powerhouse team that gives him lots of support in terms of goals and whatnot. I mean, he's got to get in there and he's got to find a way to, really. Keep his team in games. He gets a lot of shots. And I think that when you look at it overall, he's really moved forward in his game this year in the Western Hockey League. And last year, I think that the experiences always help you. And I think a smart person like Carter Hart, and he's an exceptionally smart guy. He'll take the lessons from last year and apply them. And I think he'll benefit from that. I don't have any doubt that he can be a goaltender that they can rely upon. But, I go back to the Michael DiPietro. The World Junior is a high wire act. And I'll tell you what, Michael DiPietro is a hell of a safety net.
TSN's Director of Scouting, Craig Button, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Craig, going back to Logan Stanley for a second, Jets fans, for the most part, don't see a ton of him, given that, he plays in the OHL and games are, intermittently available. But when he's performed, when the Jets fans have been able to catch him, he went to the Young Stars Tournament or the Prospects Tournament in Penticton this summer and didn't have a great performance there. He gets cut from the World Juniors here. How would you describe Logan Stanley's game that you've seen this season, and should Jets fans still consider him a sort of a prized prospect in the pipeline?
Yeah, they should consider him a prized prospect. I mean, he's been a really good player in Kitchener this year. Last year, he came back from a serious knee injury and got himself healthy and back playing and was a key performer for a team that won the Memorial Cup, a team that had Michael DiPietro in the net. So, the idea that less than 18 months after he was drafted in the first round that you're now not believing in Logan Stanley, I mean, that's just ludicrous. The bottom line is he's a real good player. He's got confidence with the puck. He makes good plays with the puck. He's a competitor. And when you're a big man like that, you're trying to get your feet underneath you. You're trying to grow and get coordinated and everything that goes with it. There's a lot going on in his world. And to me, you go to Penticton, yeah, that's nice. To me, it's not about evaluating a player about whether he's going to be good or not. It's about going there and letting the player, experience the coaching, the competition against his peer group, and then seeing where he's going. I can't begin to tell you how many people have told me, Ole Ualavi. Oh, he's not going to play. He wasn't very good in Penticton. Well, I'll tell anybody that wanted to doubt Ole Ualavi, watch the Olympics. He's going to be playing for Finland in the Olympics. That's how good he is. So you want to give up on players when they're 19 years old? Do it at your peril.
I think a lot of Jets fans are going to be happy to hear that, Craig. Considering that he wasn't picked in his first year of NHL draft eligibility and he wasn't invited to Canada's World Junior Summer Camp, how great of a story is Drake Batherson making this team?
I think it's a great story. And you know what the story is? I'll tell you what the story is, guys. The story is that Hockey Canada is always watching. They're always paying attention. They're looking for players that they feel can help their program, and whether that be the U18 or whether that be the World Junior Tournament. So you might not get invited, but they're paying attention and they're watching. So keep playing and keep trying to progress and move forward in your game, and they're going to notice. And I think that Drake is a great example of it. I think he's no different than Blake Spears from Sault Ste. Marie last year, who had never participated in the program of excellence. And people go, well, how did they miss him? They didn't miss him. He wasn't good enough. He hadn't shown enough to be invited. Show enough, and you'll get noticed, and you'll get invited. And you know, for Drake Batherson, like Blake Spears last year, they're looking for the best players to help them win this tournament. And it's another reminder about Logan Stanley. Just because he's not at the tournament doesn't mean he's not going to be a good player in the National Hockey League, and there's lots of good players. This is about trying to pick a team and players that can help you for 10 days in a position to compete for the gold medal. So that's what it's about. And I think that, like I just said about Logan Stanley, that's a good thing. And for Drake Batherson, keep playing. Just because you weren't invited doesn't mean you can't get there.
You know, Craig, speaking of gold medals, the 2018 Winter Olympics are around the corner. Do you know what the latest is on junior players playing for Team Canada at this tournament? And are you in favor of the idea?
Well, I'm in favor of the idea. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about the Olympics, but I understand what the challenges are for the junior operators. I mean, that's a hell of an ask for the junior operators in terms of, you know, letting their players go for that period of time after, because we're talking about the same players that are playing at the World Junior Tournament right now. So you're not talking about a different group of players. You're talking about four or five, maybe not that many. Maybe it's only three or four of the players that comprise the World Junior team. So, you know, while I think the Olympics is a great experience, I totally understand from the junior point of view why it becomes dicey. I mean, you're talking about not having players in your lineup and in your group for upwards of 7 weeks. Well, you know, and we're not talking about taking out the bottom players. You're talking about taking out really good players, really top-end players. So that has a material impact on things, and I think you have to recognize it. Now, is there a way to do it? I don't know. Does a junior team sit back and go, hey, listen, you know what? We think this is too beneficial to let a player pass up on it. Perhaps that becomes the case. But I don't know if it's going to happen. I think it would be great. But I also understand if it doesn't happen, why it wouldn't. I'd love it to be black and white, but it isn't. And, you know, there's a lot of gray in here. And, you know, I think that Sean Burke, the general manager of Team Canada, is trying to work through some of these issues. And, you know, again, you try to think about the opportunity to participate in the Olympics. It's a pretty neat experience, but it may not be able to happen for reasons that really aren't the fault of anybody in particular.
Craig, what do you think the identity of Team Canada is going to be at the World Junior Hockey Championships? And sort of an addendum, what do you think Dominic Ducharme, head coach, wants that identity to be?
Well, I think one of the things is, And with their group of defensemen, people might look at the size and go, this group of defensemen can skate, and they use their skating to move the puck forward. They use the puck in the defensive zone, or they use their skating in the defensive zone to make sure that they can push opponents out of space and into non-dangerous areas. They can jump into the attack. And when they do have the puck in the offensive zone, they're real smart players. I mean, Kale Clegg, playing in Brandon, to me, is the best defenseman in the Canadian Hockey League. He just controls the game. And I think Jake Bean and Cale Makar and Victor Mete and Dante Fabro, these guys are all smart players. So I think it's going to, I mean, the key is don't spend a lot of time in your own zone. I think they have a defense group that will make sure that doesn't happen. I think they have some size in the forward group and on the walls and right up the middle of the ice. So I think they're going to be able to be able to control the puck in the offensive zone, and I think they have some good scoring. I think this is a balanced team, and it's a team that I think they can get some scoring, not out of just their top scoring players on the team, but out of some other players. You just mentioned Drake Batherson; he's been a real good scorer, but he might not be in a prime time position up top in the lineup, but he can play in other roles, and certainly I think contribute offensively. So I think they have that benefit. I mean, it's going to be a good team, but this is a tournament where five teams can win it: Canada, the U.S., Finland, Sweden, and Russia. And you know, a big part of it is how you progress over the course of the week through the round robin and into the medal round. But certainly Canada has a team that I think is capable of competing for the gold medal.
Last one for you, Craig. Here in Winnipeg, the Jets have been struggling as of late, 1-3-1 in the last five games. From your perspective, is this just sort of a valley and a season that has peaks and valleys, or are there more significant concerns that are beginning to rear their head for Jets fans?
Yeah, you know, I think when you started out as well as they have, I think you got to be really careful about making judgments on on a couple of games. I mean, they had a pretty taxing schedule, and I think that people recognize it. I mean, you go into Detroit, obviously it was not a good game. You go into Florida, not a good game. And those are the types of games where you look back and you go, geez, what happened there? But teams have those over the course of the year. I think that for the Winnipeg Jets, two things are coming up right now for them that they got to really, really, I don't know, guard against is the right word, but they got to be aware of. Number one, the game against Chicago the other night, they were behind quick. They were chasing the game early. You know, that's never a good recipe, you know, for success. So I think that as much firepower as they have, teams now know that when they're playing the Winnipeg Jets, you better be ready to play right from the get-go because they can, get after you. And conversely, the Jets can't be just relying, oh, we can score, we can get back in the game. You know, Mike Babcock, it's an overused term, but it's a good term. He always says, you know, you got to start on time. And I think for the Winnipeg Jets, you know, that's one of the things they got to do. The other thing I think that they got to be really aware of is that, you know, and I thought they did a really good job of this early on in the season, and I call it positional discipline. I thought they were really, really good in terms of playing the game, you know, making sure that they were in position to take advantage offensively but not compromise defensively. I think they've gotten away from that a little bit in the last few games here, last week or so, 2 weeks, and I think that they got to get back to that. You know, there's no substitute for being patient in your positioning. The plays will come there, and I think that that's something that just has to be reemphasized within the group because they have more than enough firepower. They don't have to chase it. They just have to, you know, manage it and make sure that they don't put themselves in vulnerable positions defensively because I think they're a good team. I think they've done a lot of good things this year, and I think that this last little stretch is something they got to – I mean, doubting is the wrong word, but just reassure people, hey, this is just a blip.
Craig Button is TSN's Director of Scouting. He's one of our favorites. Craig, appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us.
Always my pleasure. Enjoy the World Junior and happy holidays.
Likewise to you too, Craig. Thanks again. When we come back, we compare the Metropolitan Division and the Central Division. Which one is tougher? Which one is better? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Minutes past 10 in the morning. Producer Rory was looking at me like, when are you going to get going here? I was waiting for the music, Rory. Seven Nation Army, buddy. Welcome back to the program. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Over the past 20 years, Keener Jerseys has established itself as one of the best jersey customizers in the world. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. We have a starting goaltender for the St. Louis Blues tonight. It's not Jake Allen. It's Carter Hutton. He comes off IR last night, back in net immediately for the Blues. So Carter Hutton, the starting goaltender for the St. Louis Blues tonight. We do not yet know the Jets starting goaltender. If there's any changes to the Jets lineup, we will bring that to you over the next hour as the Jets hit the ice for their game day skate.
I feel like Carter Hutton always, especially when he played for the Predators organization, I feel like he always played well against the Jets.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's something we can certainly look up over the course of the next I just feel like 80 or so minutes.
Yeah, I remember that Carter Hutton, I feel like, I can't remember the exact number of games he's played against Winnipeg, but I always feel like he always had some solid games, and it probably makes sense. He's a Thunder Bay boy, and probably the reason why. He's local, had some family in the crowd.
This sounds like some research you're going to be doing in the next to see how his numbers actually are there, right, Dave?
Way too lazy.
Way too lazy. All righty. Somebody can do it for us on our behalf.
And it shouldn't be a surprise that Carter Hutton's starting tonight because, just like the Jets, I mean, you expected St. Louis to go with two different goalies this weekend in this back-to-back, right? So we're expecting, you know, to find out who the Jets' starting goaltender is going to be shortly. And, you know, we kind of all agreed there's a good chance it could be Steve Mason. But if it's not Steve Mason tonight, he's going to get into the lineup tomorrow night here at Bell MTS Place.
Absolutely.
And 3-4-1.
3-4-1. There you go. So is that good?
919, 2.46 goals against average.
Well, the save percentage is, you know, I guess it's average. Yeah. Pretty average. It's the average record, average save percentage, average
maybe
goals
it was one,
against
maybe,
average.
Perhaps an average analysis. Yeah. Perhaps it was one game I remember Carter not having.
I think didn't he get his first NHL start?
Yeah, I think so.
I think he maybe, I don't know if it was a shutout, yeah. But I remember that game, where he was playing for the Predators still and he had a good performance against the
and obviously it created quite the lore because I still remember it to this day
vividly. In fact,
what's Rob Zepp up to these days?
He had that one and only victory, I think, in the end. I think that was the only game he played, I think, for the Flyers when he came in and, you know, beat the Jets. His, you know, journeyman goaltender galore came into Winnipeg on that Sunday night, if I recall correctly, and defeated the Jets as a member of the Flyers. Any event, we will hopefully there's no Rob Zepp reincarnated or anything tonight. The Metropolitan Division and the Central Division, I think clearly the two best divisions in the NHL so far this season.
No way, it's the Atlantic.
You guys are mocking me already, aren't you?
We are.
Okay, well, as long as we're off to a good start for this
segment.
I don't
think we mock you enough, to be honest with you.
Really? I think you probably do. Which one would you say is the tougher of the two divisions, the Metropolitan or the Central? I mean, you have such good teams in both.
Yep.
I mean, the Metropolitan right now has a three-way tie atop of it with Columbus, New Jersey, and Washington all holding down 41 points in
Andrew,
the Metropolitan
which one
division.
Of those teams is not like the other?
I would say New Jersey. New Jersey is not like the other, but they've been able to keep it going. And so at this point in time, you know, the Devils, everybody keeps waiting for them to fall back down to earth, but they're not doing it just yet. And so then you look at the Central Division, and they have sort of have their three upper echelon teams, and that's the Predators, the Blues, they're tied atop the division, and the Jets 3 points behind. But there aren't, I mean, even the bad teams in the two divisions aren't bad like they are in some of the other divisions. They're not Buffalo bad, and they're not Arizona bad. The Avalanche are 15-14-2, certainly respectable with 32 points. And then you look at the Hurricanes, and they're sort of struggling a little bit. They're 13-11-7 with 33 points. So these two divisions really are competitive top to bottom. There's not the free space on the bingo card that you have in the Buffalo Sabres or the Ottawa Senators in the Atlantic, or you have in the Arizona Coyotes in the Pacific.
Yeah, I think you could go either way with this, Drew, and I think it's a really interesting question. And I don't think, you know, as we talked about, many people thought that the Devils would be tied for the division lead with such good teams like Columbus, Washington, and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, to me, has to be the biggest surprise, and I know you want to talk about them later, Drew.
Yeah.
But this Pittsburgh Penguins team, you know, they've lost three games in a row. You know, they're only 2 points up on Philly and Carolina, as you mentioned, who are last in the division right now. And, you know, I think we might be a little bit biased here in Winnipeg because we watch the Central Division so much. But I think last year I would say the Metro Division was clearly stronger than the Central,
mm-hmm.
with teams like Dallas and Colorado really struggling. Colorado obviously being the worst team. But I think the Central is back to being the best division, guys. And, you know, Colorado's playing some really good hockey right now. And I realize, you know, they've struggled a little bit here in this last 2 to 3 week stretch. But, you know, the Colorado Avalanche, you know, they've already got 15 wins on the season. I think they only had 20 wins on the season all year last year. Not many more than that if they did. And, you know, Nashville right now is the class of this division. They've won 7 of their last 10. They've only lost one game in regulation in the last 10. But when you look at the top of that division with Nashville, St. Louis, and Winnipeg, Minnesota and Chicago not that far behind. You
know, both of whom have won four games in a row, pardon me.
Right, and one of those teams is probably going to miss the playoffs. Certainly, it's either going to be Dallas, Chicago, or Minnesota most likely, unless the Winnipeg Jets really fall, and I don't think they are. So the Dallas Stars, with all their firepower, Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, Alex Radulov, John Klingberg, so on and so forth, Jason mm-hmm. Spezza. I mean, this Dallas Stars team is having trouble just staying relevant in the playoff race right now, tied with Chicago and Minnesota. So I'm going to lean towards more the Central just because I think at the bottom of the Metro Division, it's weaker. But when you consider that Pittsburgh right now isn't even in a playoff spot right now, I think you could certainly make the argument, Dave, that the Metro's better.
And then we'll talk about the Penguins later on in the show because there's a lot of chatter that they might be in the market to make a move. Jim Rutherford, their general manager, came out and pretty much said as much, given that, as you said, Ezzie, they're not in a playoff spot. Talk about that in hour number three of the program. Dave, your thoughts on the two powerhouse divisions in the NHL?
Yeah, no, I think it's a good question, Drew. I think both divisions are significant. I mean, you look at those top three, four teams, and really you can kind of intersperse any of those and say that they're a significant challenge to face. I mean, I think Nashville Predators right now, they're showing they're the class of the West, in my mind, and they don't have Ryan Ellis yet in the lineup, and they're playing as well as they're playing. So I think Nashville is by far the best team in the Western Conference, I think, and probably, in my mind, they might be the best team in the NHL. But and St. Louis, again, we talked about it with Lou Korek, just how many injuries they have, and even though, you know, they've hit a, quote, skid, they're still playing exceptionally well. So you got a St. Louis team that's just phenomenal. We've seen what the Jets are capable of doing. They have a, you know, when they're firing, their firepower is as good as anybody in the NHL. Minnesota, you know, they're, you know, Colt Nora, I saw on Twitter, labeled them as a sleeping team. You know, they're not exactly the most exciting team, but the reality is they've won four straight. They're a solid team. And then Chicago, I mean, Chicago's a team that people now are already kind of looking past, and we saw on Thursday night that they still are able to get it done. Corey Crawford's still a very good goaltender in this league. And then Dallas was kind of this cavalcade of characters put together, and, you know, everybody anticipated they'd be really taking that step forward after a disappointing season. Now, they haven't been able to do that, but at the same time, they're not out of it. They're tied with Chicago and Minnesota, so they're still kind of, you know, nipping at the heels. And then Colorado, the team that was kind of the joke of the division, is shown that they, while obviously not going to be a playoff team, are still a challenge on a night-in, night-out basis, simply because they've got a group of young players who seem to believe in each other. So to me, top to bottom, I would probably give the edge to Central, but I think that's most likely bias-related, simply because I watch the Central a lot more than I do the Metropolitan.
Yeah, Dave, and, you know, sticking with the Metro division there, you know, right now you've got Columbus, New Jersey, and Washington, as Drew mentioned, tied for the division lead. I wouldn't be surprised if Pittsburgh, by the end of this, is back, mm-hmm. you know, as one of the top two teams in the Metro Division, because we know that Pittsburgh has, you know, struggled. Matt Murray's had injury problems, and, you know, Sidney Crosby at times just hasn't looked like himself. Same thing goes for Evgeny Malkin, even though their numbers are fine. But, you know, this division, you know, you have Philadelphia, loses 10 games in a row and then comes back and wins 5 games in a row, and now all of a sudden they're only 3 or 4 points out of a playoff spot. So it's really tough to make it in that Metro Division, and it's really tough to make it in the Central Division. But I think there's one thing that's clear, Drew. These two divisions are much better than the Pacific and the Atlantic.
Absolutely. Just final word. The Central Division's record versus the Metropolitan so far this season, 34 wins, 15 losses, and 6 overtime losses.
So I think you just proved that Ezzie and I were actually right.
That's exactly right. The Central Division dominating over the Metro in head-to-head matchups. When we come back, Adam Vingan of the Tennessean newspaper is going to join us. The Jets into Nashville on Tuesday. We talk about the Predators next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.